the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and we go to the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, Jimmy, for a very special guest.
Yes, we're pleased now to be joined by our longtime friend, Brett McMurphy. He is with the Stadium Network, and he has covered college football for many, many years. Brett, how are you?
Hey, good to talk to you guys. Hope everything's good and you're staying safe there in Knoxville.
Well, we have been so far. What about you? How are you occupying your time?
Well, before I answer, have you seen the Tiger King on Netflix?
Yes, I have, actually.
I live 5 miles from Big Cat Rescue, so I'm still alive.
No.
I haven't been knocked off by Carol Baskin, so everything's good. But, yeah, just staying out of trouble. And fortunately, in Tampa, we got some nice weather, so we're able to, you know, get outside and walk around a little bit and not be cooped up in the house all day.
I'm just wondering why Tom Brady rented a house from Derek Jeter and not you.
Well, it's about 10 times bigger for one reason, but yeah, that's a beautiful house. I'm sure you saw my tweet, but yeah, I did a story on that for the New York Times several years ago when Jeter built the house. And Brady's new house that Jeter owns, I guess now that he's with Miami, no longer with the Yankees and in Tampa all the time. But it's if you guys have Best Buy electronic stores up there, it's basically got the same square footage as your average Best Buy store. So not
wow.
Bad if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah. Brett, I want to ask you about a story you did recently. You had a survey of athletic directors. I think there were 130 of them that were polled. 112 responded. About a fifth of them indicated that they think there's less than at least a 50% chance we won't have football this season. That's going to be, and one of them, I guess, said dire consequences if that occurs. This is going to be devastating to a lot of athletic departments if we don't have college football, isn't it?
Yes, it will, Jimmy. And that survey was done. Now it's almost been 2 weeks ago. So just think of everything that's changed in the past 2 weeks. We've had Wimbledon canceled. We've had, there's reports of British Open has been canceled. Ohio State and other schools have canceled on-campus classes in the summer. So, there's a great deal of fear and concern that there won't be a full 12-game football season. But what I read today was if the season does not start on time, what are some of the options to still save a football season? And that varies from playing a conference-only schedule to, if you have to start the season in October or November, continuing it is even into March. We could have a football version of March Madness. And then if we don't have football at all in the fall, some AD said, look, we'll play in the spring. And if we do that, we'd have the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl. The semifinal games for the college football playoff could be around Memorial Day. You guys would have laughed at me a few weeks ago if I brought that up. But now, based on the way everything's going, that could be a very real possibility. And the last thing is the most frustrating thing for everybody involved, the commissioners, the ADs, the coaches, obviously. Nobody knows when we're going to get the all clear signal.
Right.
When are we going to get the green light to move ahead and go? And until we get that, whatever that is, whether it's a magic bullet that cures this thing or whatever the situation is where life can somewhat return to normal, we can't even think of having a college football season. And that's what's so frustrating for all these people.
When you see that there are a number of major sporting events as far down the road as July being canceled, does that cast a greater doubt on whether we will have college football?
It does, Jimmy, and this is strictly my opinion. This is not based on what any of the athletic directors told me, but I don't think we're going to have a football season in the fall, and it's for one simple reason. I don't think when we get to August that the university presidents at all these colleges are going to say, okay, we'll say Tennessee, for example. Are they really going to say, okay, all 30, 40,000, whatever the enrollment is there, all of the students from all over the world that go to Tennessee, it's safe. Come back on campus, take your classes. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's going to be the norm everywhere. I think they'll have online classes only in the fall at these major universities. And if you can't have the student body on campus, you can't have the student athletes on campus. And if they're not on campus, how do you have a football season? I do think, though, if we can get the all clear by December or January, then we would have a season in the spring. Would that be conference-only games? Would that be a 12-game schedule? I mean, all that stuff would have to be figured out. But, yeah, Jimmy, the more things get canceled, again, I pray I'm wrong. I just don't think the way these presidents are, they're going to take that risk to allow all these students back on the campus. And also, there was a group of five president, a source told me, and this was 2 weeks ago. So if you can go back 2 weeks, things were a lot different. Not a lot, but they weren't as dire as they seem to be now. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, a group of five president told another group of five president, let's cancel the football season right now and move it to the spring. So if they were thinking that 2 weeks ago, you know, what are they going to be thinking in the next few months? That's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
Brett, certainly appreciate your time, and it's good to talk to you once again. I will say another thing, and that's really something and worth considering when you think about what makes up the student body for each and every Power 5 university, that they do come from far and wide and some from other countries. And then you also think to just the expansion that we went through several years ago now, where the SEC expanded to 14 teams as other conferences did, like the Big Ten and so on. But you think you could wind up where out of a 14-team conference, you could have eight states, or I should say five states, where things look to be promising, but you could also have three states that have conference members that are still considered to be hot spots or an uphill battle. And I think that's also something that would really gum up the works of just things trying to move forward with any approach to a campaign, don't you think?
You are 1,000% right. I mean, we'll say that, you know, specifically we'll say the SEC. What if nine schools are like, hey, we're good to go. We're having our students back on campus. Let's go. And then you've got five other universities that are like, hey, look, we're shutting it down. No students on campus in the fall. So what does the SEC do? They can't force those five schools to play. So do they tell the other nine schools, look, we're not playing because the entire conference can't play? Do they only let those nine schools compete? I mean, then it gets really crazy. And you're right. I think that the conferences want to do things. They want to do the same thing. But basically, you may have a situation where some schools are like, hey, it's safe. We're good to go. And others are like, hey, we're not doing this. You know, our students are coming back until January. And then as a league, what do you do? I don't know the answer to that. It would get real sticky and real messy. But that could be a very real possibility. You're absolutely right on that.
Do you think, because it was considered that, I mean, for instance, Greg Sankey spoke to that it might at first be an institution-by-institution practice as to whether or not they hold spring practice, and then everybody, of course, shut it down. But do you think that we would potentially see any college football without fans being a part of it?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's doubtful, because I'm just basing that on if we can't have fans in the stands, then how are we going to have 30,000 students on campus? Mm-hmm. If we can have 30,000 students on campus, then you should be able to have fans in the stands. So I would say it's doubtful. But, you know, again, you never know. If that's a safety precaution they want to take to get football games in, then absolutely they'll do it. But I kind of think those two things together, go together. So I'd be surprised if that happened. But again, it was funny, after my article posted this morning, you know, on watchstadium.com, I had a Power 5 coach text me, because one of the possibilities is splitting the football season over two semesters. And he's like, you can't play football over two semesters. Kids, you know, the eligibility is different. That gets into the recruiting season and all this. And I said, well, that's just one of the possibilities. What I wanted to tell him is, look, this, forget everything you know in the past about recruiting schedules and dead periods and spring practices and summer workouts and, you know, dates that you report, that's all out the window. This is unprecedented times, and we're going to have to do things differently. And if that means playing over two semesters, if that means they only have, you know, 4 weeks to practice, if that means we're playing before no fans, whatever it is, they're going to do whatever they can necessary to get this season in, because they've got to somehow recoup some of this football revenue that they also desperately need.
Our guest, Brett McMurphy of the Stadium, he's been nominated for 2 Pulitzer Prize awards in reporting for investigative reporting. Brett, I do want to ask you in regard to one comment I saw from an athletic director, quote, most Power 5 athletic departments won't miss a beat, but it'll be devastating for the rest of us. Do you think that is an accurate statement?
Well, it's definitely devastating for the group of five.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Power 5, I don't think all the Power 5s are, like, out of the woods. I mean, I think, obviously, a Tennessee, an Alabama, a Texas, a USC. I think those guys are going to be okay. Look, everybody's going to take some hits, but they're going to be at different levels. I mean, just yesterday, Iowa State AD Jamie Pollard announced that his coaching staff would not get raises in the next year. They would also not be eligible for any incentive bonuses. And they did that to save $4 million over the next year. And that's a Power 5 school already, you know, trying to trim their costs. So it's going to impact schools a lot differently. Obviously, the big name schools in the Power 5, you know who they are. You know, it's not going to hurt them as much because they have more resources, they have more money. But some of the smaller Power 5s, all of the group of 5s, and also, you know, the FCS schools, these guys are really going to get dinged too, because a lot of them, you know, they depend on that one game road trip to a Power 5 team for $1 million payday, and that's basically their budget for the entire year. You know, one scenario is we don't play any non-conference games. Well, if that happens, then that payday goes away. So, yeah, Jimmy, I think everybody's going to be impacted in some ways. It's going to be on different levels based on, obviously, the resources and the different universities. So, yeah, I don't think it's clear-cut that all Power 5s are going to come out of this without any damage, if you will.
And if we don't have the football revenue, that means there could be a number of sports that are not going to be able to field a team, correct?
Well, not field the team, they'll just eliminate them. I mean, that's the reality of it. That sucks, but that's, you know, other than football and, you know, there's a handful or maybe a dozen, two dozen maybe, basketball schools that generate revenue, every other college sport loses money. So if the athletic director goes to the president's office and says, hey, you know what, instead of $90 million in revenue, we're only getting $50 million, we're only getting $40 million. And she's like, okay, well, we need to, where can we cut $50 million? And he's like, well, if we cut sports A through G, that'll save us $30 million. So then the president has to decide, do I really want to cut soccer, wrestling, you know, volleyball, baseball, gymnastics, crew, whatever. Do we want to really cut all these to save $40 million, or do we need to keep these opportunities available for student athletes? That's some of these hard decisions that these presidents and athletic directors are going to make. And I think, yeah, you're right, Jimmy, that we're going to see some of these sports. They used to be club sports 20 years ago, and now they're NCAA sports. I think these sports will go away. Could it be for 1 or 2 years, or could it be permanently? It's going to kind of depend on each institution.
Hmm. Brett, as we continue to say one day to the next, it's unprecedented. It's a very different time. But from your vantage point, what is it like to see some student athletes do what they can to lend a helping hand? You've got Trey Smith at the University of Tennessee that's voicing PSAs to say stay home, stay at home, stay safe. And then you also look at just the incredible effort of somebody like Trevor Lawrence to help raise money with a goal of raising $1 million to help with COVID-19 relief. What is it like to see the active side of student-athletes in trying to help out and just create awareness?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that is so awesome. And I try to retweet those type of things because it seems like there always is so much doom and gloom. But Sam Ellinger, the Texas quarterback, he's also on social media trying to raise funds to help people. You know, it's just great. I mean, it just shows, you know, unfortunately, all the headlines are the coaches that, you know, commit violations or get fired or just do different things like that. And there's so much good involved with college athletics. And especially now, a time of need, you see, you know, those players, like you mentioned, Trey and Trevor and Sam doing that. And I think that's great. And then, you know, I mean, it's similar but different, but, you know, Wyoming's athletic director the other day announced that he voluntarily is taking a 10% pay cut until January 1st to help the university out, and he's going to donate more money to the school's athletic fund. So you see stuff like that. And yeah, it's unfortunate that stuff didn't get more airtime or more play, but that's really, really cool, especially, you know, when you see, the student-athletes doing that. You know, that's really special, and, you know, that means a lot. It makes me think a lot more of those guys. And, you know, look, we're not supposed to root for teams or players, but when I see guys do that, you know, I'm guilty. I root for them to have all the success in the world.
Our guest, Brett McMurphy, the stadium. Brett, I did want to touch on your preseason top 25 team. How close were you to putting Tennessee in it?
I think I had them, gosh, that's so long ago. I can't remember who was in it. I think I had them in like 26 to 35 range. I didn't really rank those people, but I had them as teams like that I was considering when I put in, whoever I put in 25th, you'd have to remind me if you have it in front of you. But
Ole Miss.
I had them, Ole Miss, okay. I put Ole Miss 25th. Jeez, I need to update that.
higher or lower?
I'd try lower. You know, yeah, I don't know. You do that. I actually did that thing. It ran, I think, before the actual national title game kicked off. You know, you don't want to be the last one to put out those way too early preseason polls. But, you know, I think that, you know, the way Tennessee ended the season, that's obviously encouraging for the upcoming year. You know, the deal is, though, now that, you know, again, if we don't start on time, it looks like we're not going to start on time. And if we don't start on time, we have a delayed season or it gets moved back to spring, you kind of throw all that stuff out the window. I mean, I know a lot of people that are into gambling, they're already, you see these people putting out these lists. Hey, these are the play-on teams because they got all their spring practice in, or these are the play-against teams because they've got a first-year coach and they couldn't have spring practice. So, you know, it's sad that that's the thing people are going to look at. But, you know, obviously the positives for Tennessee was the strong finish last year. And, you know, it's just, you know, depending on when the season is, I'm sure it's going to help some schools. It's going to hurt some schools. It's just how can these coaching staffs and student athletes deal with this adversity and something they've never experienced before. Certainly the fact that Jeremy Pruitt's not a first-year coach is obviously, I think, a benefit over somebody like a Mike Leach at Mississippi State or Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, because they've got their players, you know, they're sitting there saying, if they didn't get all their work in, they're going, what do we do exactly? I know how we did it with the previous staff. How do they want things done? They can't practice. I know they're doing virtual meetings and all that stuff, but it's not the same thing as the day-to-day contact. So, you know, it's going to be a crazy year. And if you're somebody that tries to make predictions and actually tries to be accurate, I think it's going to be, you know, twice as hard because of all the unknowns and how this impacts everybody.
One other quick one. You had LSU number 3 in the preseason poll that I saw. Is that a vote of confidence for Miles Brennan or Ed Orgeron?
That was a Joe Brady hadn't left yet.
Okay.
So I would drop him. Yeah, Brady was still on board. We had a number of guys that were still had not officially left for the NFL. I do think LSU is going to be okay. I think a lot of people expect them to maybe fall off the face of the earth. I don't buy that. But yeah, I would certainly now I would drop them from 3. But at the time, I wasn't projecting who I thought was staying or going. I was just, you know, who I knew was there at that time. So obviously Joe Brady, I think that's going to be a big hit, losing them. And then I actually had Clemson number one, and that was with thinking that Travis Etienne would go to the NFL, and he actually stuck around. So I'm definitely going to leave Clemson up there at the top.
Hey, Brett, so good to catch up with you. Thank you so much. You do a terrific job. I always have admired what you've been able to do, and thank you for taking the time to visit with us.
You got it. I'd say I hope to see you at SEC Media Days, but I'm afraid we're not going to have them. So hopefully I'll see you at a game somewhere down the road.
Yeah, they've already canceled them. Yeah.
Well, not the spring meetings, the actual media.
Oh, the football media days. Gotcha. Sorry. Yeah, I hope that. Yeah. I hope the same. Hey, Brett, thank you so much. Yeah. We appreciate it.
And that you got is it. Thanks, guys.
Yes, sir. Brett McMurphy with the stadium does an outstanding job. We appreciate his time.
Yeah, I hope he stays safe and stays away from Carroll. We'll get a break and be back with more when we return. A news update from Bob Yarbrough and our sister station News Talk 98.7. That's next on Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
If it weren't for sports,
we'd be forced to play that crap other stations play.
Anybody need that?
Nobody.
99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Time for us to head to the newsroom, where our good friend Bob Yarbrough from our sister station News Talk 98.7 joins us. Bob, how are you?
Hey, John, doing well this afternoon. Just our daily COVID-19 update, as we do each and every weekday right about this same time here on the Sports Animal. The big news this afternoon, just a few moments ago, about a half hour ago, Tennessee Governor Bill Lee issued an executive order which requires citizens to stay home unless they're carrying out essential activities. This is different than the safer at home order that was issued recently. That was pretty much a request. This is a requirement. Again, Tennessee Governor Bill Lee has issued just a few moments ago an executive order that requires citizens to stay home unless they're carrying out essential activities. What's on the essential activity list? That's going to be the next big question. Certainly things, and by the way, the governor is still addressing the media right now. A lot of the answers to a lot of the questions that are going to come from this, he could be covering at this moment. Grocery stores, pharmacy runs, doctor's visits, things along those lines. As far as job occupations, of course, it's emergency workers, the broadcast community, anything that is considered an essential activity under this order. If you're not part of that, you've been ordered to stay at home. This is in effect until April the 14th, all right? He's basically updated his most recent executive order, the stay-at-home order, again, in effect now, and in an impact lasting until at least April the 14th. Now, the numbers from the Tennessee Department of Health regarding COVID-19 cases in the state, it's up to 2,845. That's an increase of 162 cases from this same time yesterday. You want to look at something positive from, say, Tuesday to Wednesday, that jump was 444. The jump from yesterday to today, 162. Still 263 people hospitalized, 32 deaths in the state connected to COVID-19. 220 people have recovered from COVID-19. More specifically, in Knox County, COVID-19 numbers now 85 confirmed cases in the county. That's up from 77 yesterday, 13 hospitalizations, one fatality here in the county, and 42 recovered cases, which basically means they've been released from isolation. John, again, the big story, Tennessee Governor Bill Lee, an executive order this afternoon requiring citizens to stay at home unless they're carrying out essential activities. For now, this executive order is in place until April the 14th.
Boy, it was something to see how they arrived at it, and it was by looking at traffic data. They had seen that while the citizens of the state of Tennessee were pretty well behaved over the second half of March, they realized that this week there was an uptick, especially in all the cars that started moving more and more and about, and that's when they decided they've got to come out with this order.
That's
wasn't that right?
That's what the governor says. It's cell phone data that they're able to track, not track your specific phone, but just see the movement, how much movement there is. And a few weeks back, the movement, according to the governor, was on the decline. And then in the recent weeks here, as you mentioned, they noticed an uptick in that movement, which he says is clear evidence that some citizens are beginning to disregard safer at home measures. It's dangerous. It's unacceptable. And it's a threat to lives in our community. That's why the order he issued today is now requiring Tennesseans to stay at home through at least April 14th.
And, of course, folks can find all the information they need at newstalk987.com, correct?
They can, and we'll be back again with another update every weekday afternoon right about this same time, COVID-19 update here on the Sports Animal.
Bob, thank you very much.
You got it. My pleasure.
We'll get a break and be back with more. Up next, it's Slap Shots with Mike Murray, president and GM of the Ice Bears. That's next as you listen to Sports Talk. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and we head once again to the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline for Slap Shots with Mike Murray, president and GM of the Ice Bears. Mike, how are you?
Not too bad, guys. Just enduring this like everyone else. It's crazy times, but thanks for having me on.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time, and as we get deeper and deeper on this path, I'm just wondering, what has it been like for the operations of the Ice Bears as well as the SPHL over the last week?
Well, it's it's been tricky. Obviously, we're doing everything remotely. Like I said, every morning at 9, we have roll call with our staff. I'm doing our best not to have to let anybody go. We basically just fast forwarded our off season to the tasks that we would normally be doing. Obviously, creating promos for next year. Just looking at different ways to help grow the business, especially when it's going to come out of this in the fall. And just, a lot of forecasting with numbers and a lot of conference calls. But it's, like I said on the last call since we spoke last, I believe there's also opportunity for expansion. We'll know more about that in the coming weeks. From leagues above and below us that may fall into our footprint. So that may be a good sign for the league to grow when we come out of this, and just have to do all the due diligence in those categories, just to kind of make sure it's a good fit and it'll work. So there's talk about that too. There's still a lot going on. It's amazing how how much more I get done here at my condo with not many distractions, which is interesting. But I just heard the governor's news, we'll be at this for another while longer.
Mike, what type of response have you had from your corporate and season ticket holders, given via the options that you've provided them?
Actually, I'm very very pleased. We came up with 5 different options. Obviously, we had 5 games to make up, and what they wanted to do with that, obviously, John is one of our season ticket holders, and one of the options was to donate the funds to help the operations of the team for the summer for those last 5 games. So, John, I appreciate that very much. We've had a lot of our partners, season ticket holders, do that as well. And obviously, it's with any business to have their the rug pulled out from under them like that, it's going to be a challenge. But for the most part, it's been great to hear that our season ticket holders are going to remain season ticket holders. There's only a few that we're going to lose, and for different reasons. But, either getting a credit to next year or already signing up and making sure that they don't lose their seats. We have a longevity discount in place for a lot of our season ticket holders that have been with us a long time. Obviously, they don't want to lose that. So they've already committed to next year, and especially our corporate partners. I mean, they've been so supportive in talking to them, and just obviously when we get back on the ice, they're going to need to get their name out there. They're going to need to be in front of people and, to get their businesses back to where it belongs as well. So that's it's been great. I've really been pleased with the conversations, had a few great laughs with some of our older folks that are trying to conduct their own little, conference call in their living room, just talking about what they were going to do. I've had some good laughs about that, but I've always said we've had amazing fans that support us, and it's been great getting the responses that we are from them. It's been a tedious task, obviously reaching out to over 1,200 season ticket holders, but we're getting through them, and the response has been great.
Talk about the donations the Ice Bears have made to the UT Medical Center.
Well, that was just something that that came about. So obviously, you know, like I said, when you have your financial feet pulled out from underneath you and you got to scramble, and, you know, you, I'm sure everybody's the same way, just kind of hanging on and seeing what's next. But, you know, we have a great partnership with the University of Tennessee Medical Center, and we got to thinking on one of our brainstorming calls at 9 a.m., about how we could help contribute, and we reached out to them, and we had hundreds and hundreds of Ice Bear hockey socks that we've had over, you know, this past year and a number of different years for specialty jerseys and stuff that just were worn once. So we hauled them over there, and they're obviously going to sanitize them and turn them into masks and to equipment covers once they're sterilized. So it's it was neat to be able to contribute in that way. And, you know, ask them to kind of follow up if they would and kind of see what some of those look like. And you know, just obviously everybody, this is what's so great about this community, is that we can all come together and try to help out. And that was just one way that we did. And we just did that the other day. So it's it was good to help out.
Yeah, it was no doubt about it. It has been surreal just to see all the twists and turns as things continue to unfold right before our very eyes. But I know it had to be very strange for you all to hold the first ever jersey auction of items that were never worn by the Ice Bears, in terms of that was one of the games that didn't take place in terms of the ladies' night. What was it like with such a unique auction and the chance to, of course, adorn themselves in pink?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the guys didn't even get to wear those jerseys, but we did have each player sign them before they left, because we knew that they were going on to an online auction, and they went very well. And obviously, you know, once the cost comes out of there, there's, you know, a little bit of a revenue stream that we helped pay the players' last payroll with, and just to help to get them back out of town. But, you know, typically at the end of a season, we will offer one of the jerseys to a player. Obviously, as a player myself, I always love to keep one of the jerseys from the places I've always, you know, played. And so we honor that here. And so we have another set of jerseys, actually the game-worn jerseys that we've worn all season long, will be, you know, will be auctioned off online as well. And obviously, normally we do that in person, but so just keep an eye out for them. Our fans are looking for those, too, for their favorite players. So we'll be doing a lot of online merchandise sales throughout the summer. And, you know, we have you know, we have a lot of jerseys in our office right now that we'll be doing that with. So that'll be a kind of a, obviously, a small revenue stream for us as well.
What has it been like to stay connected with your players, as well as see what they're doing to pass the time and stay healthy, as well as those that in the NHL might keep, obviously, operate with fingers crossed that they hope to resume their season at some point?
Yeah, I would love to see them resume even a small portion of the season. It'll be a good sign if that happens, and obviously it'll help everybody kind of, you know, look forward to rebuilding over the summer that did happen. So crossing our fingers for that, but it has been neat. We've asked our players to do the same thing about how we, you know, keep in contact, obviously, to have the players not do fan functions towards the end, because we weren't really knowing what we were getting into before all of this. And, you know, so we've asked them to kind of send in videos of what they're doing back home. And so we'll be releasing them periodically here over our social media. But I've gotten a kick out of myself just seeing some of these NHL guys and what they're doing at home with their wives or girlfriend. They're doing, obviously, trying to stay in shape and different ways to do it. But somebody started something on TikTok where basically, I don't know if they're a wife or girlfriend, but they basically climb up on them and they go all the way around their body and back through and without touching the ground one time. And that's not easy to do, but it's kind of funny to watch. And, you know, other NHL guys are challenging other NHL guys to do it, and it's been kind of funny to watch. But, you know, our videos, I don't think will be that like that, but it's good to see that the guys kind of reach out and our fans can kind of see where they live and what they're doing and that kind of thing. So look forward to that.
Mike, in regard to a survey I saw from the NHL that I just saw it recently, they had a vote on who's the most complete player in the NHL, and they came up with Sidney Crosby. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he's definitely a two-way player that, some people love him, some people love to hate him, but, I mean, because he's so good. And any of his teammates, I know some guys that that I used to play with that coached him or whatever. He is, like, a totally dedicated to the sport hockey player. Like, his skill level is beyond, he just does some amazing things. You can argue that Connor McDavid, obviously, is one of the fastest skaters out there. He does some amazing things, too. But, his plus-minus isn't quite as great as Sidney Crosby. So, it's to be a leader, obviously, and play that way for as many years consistently as he has, I wouldn't disagree with that.
Would you, if you were picking the all-time most complete, would you go Wayne Gretzky or a different direction?
That's tough. I mean, Gretzky was amazing, obviously, and his numbers are just outstanding. As far as being a two-way player, I don't know that I would put him in that category. I mean, there's a number of others that would be right along there too. Obviously, Steve Yzerman was a great two-way player. There's a ton of them, but I mean, if you ever watched old footage of Gretzky, it's just like he could see the game that, like, if we all went to a UT football game and sat about 15 rows up and wondered why the quarterback doesn't see that guy because he's 250 pounds on the ground, but from up top it looks like the other guy's wide open. Why can't he hit him? I kind of felt like that's the way Gretzky saw the ice. He saw it from above, and he knew the guys were open before he ever got the puck, and that's why he made the plays that he did. But that's the best way I can, make that analogy. But he's just an amazing player, and he did so many great things and has done so many great things for the sport. To have some of these kids come out of California as number one draft picks, the reason for that is because Gretzky went out there. And I don't know what the number is of hockey arenas that have been built in Southern California, or that side of the country since he got traded to LA. But it's a big number.
We did see, Mike, that the mayor of Toronto said that they weren't going to hold any of their public events through the end of June. And I'm just wondering, when you see news like that, does that dampen the spirit of hoping that we get to a point where the National Hockey League and the NBA, obviously, with the Raptors up there, do you think that's something that probably just kind of throws a wet blanket on optimism?
I mean, yeah. I mean, like I said, on many times on the show, it's like it changes every day. I mean, mm-hmm. I almost have to turn off the news sometimes because it's just you get so involved in what's changing every day. But that would put a damper on it for sure. But like we talked about, if the NHL saw the light and could play best of three series just to get it done, I mean, that would be hopeful as well. But obviously, like I said, we've talked about this before. It's so much bigger than any sport or anything. When you see the numbers of the people in New York and in different these hot spots, it's just crazy to even think about putting anybody in jeopardy in a situation like that. So, like I said, I hope we'll all get through it, and we'll be back on the ice in October and just kind of build it back up again. It's that's one thing I've loved about living here. Obviously I'm from Canada, been here a long time, but that's one thing I've loved about living here in Knoxville, Tennessee, is that when things do go south, people step up and support each other, and I fully expect to see that here when this is all over.
Well, you guys make a point of being a big part of that yourselves. Fantastic work with the donation of all the material to UT's Medical Center. How are the folks doing up in Sarnia?
They're doing great. I talk to them quite a bit more than I used to, just because I know they're worried about me down here, and everything's pretty much locked up in Canada. Numbers aren't quite as big in Canada. They shut the border down pretty swiftly right away. So it's always great to talk to them. And I get the, it was my daughter's birthday on Tuesday, so I got to actually, we did like a Zoom thing, house party, whatever they call it now, where you can see all, it's like the Brady Bunch. You can see my brother and sister in all different window panes. And so that was fun. That was great to have for my daughter. Obviously you can't take her out anywhere. She got to come down to my condo and just, we just celebrated her birthday with the family. So it was great. Thanks for asking.
Well, hope it was a great birthday, and I know that you look forward to the day you can go out and celebrate for real. But, hey, we always appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Be safe, stay well, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great weekend. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, you as well. That's Mike Murray, President and GM of the Ice Bears, as he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. A final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk is next on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Looks like you've been missing a lot of work lately.
I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Segment to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
And, John, we certainly appreciate Mike Murray joining us. We look forward to, in a little bit, visiting with Brent Hubbs. Got some recruiting news out there. We've got a basketball player that's come. There's a football player that's committed. There's a quarterback Tennessee's looking at that's in Florida. A lot going on in terms of recruiting. And we'll ask him certainly about the impact of the dead period being extended to May the 31st.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that we just continue to see the target change, and yet that hasn't slowed down the Volunteers as Tennessee adds two commitments to the class of 21, as well as a walk-on to join the roster this year. And as you might imagine, that also includes an uptick in where Tennessee stands in the rivals' rankings. Tennessee now up to 14th when it comes to the class of 2021. That's second best in the Southeastern Conference and second in the Eastern Division as Tennessee leapfrogs Georgia and LSU in the overall conference rankings.
Yeah, it's I like what the staff has done. I think they've got a pretty good eye for talent. I think they have jumped on some people early with their evaluation. I think that has helped them in certain situations. So I like where they're going, and I also feel like, and we've heard this from some players, that they feel like Tennessee gave them a tangible reason to say the program is going in the right direction. Tangible by winning the last six in a row, by going 8-5, by winning a bowl game. And so whenever you do show that your program's going in the right direction, certainly that should pay dividends in recruiting.
Yes, it sure should. And so it's something to see Tennessee not only generate but also sustain some momentum when it comes to the recruiting trail. And then also some of the things that they're doing at VolQuest is they're doing a deep dive into some of Tennessee's classic football games within somewhat recent memory. This week it was the 1995 Tennessee win at Alabama, so can't wait to hear Brent give his what stood out to him about that fantastic victory for the Vols as they shut down a losing streak to the Crimson Tide. But we look forward to that. And, of course, if you have a question or comment for Brent, you can get your question ready by calling 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We've got hour number three of Sports Talk coming up as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.